Well, good morning. My name is Caitlin Goss. I am here to talk about family boundaries. I feel bad for any of you that were here last week, and I heard it was stellar. And like coming back for round two, just want you to know this is the B team speaking today. So set your standards really low. No, I'm excited today. I'm excited for us to be here and just spend some time together and looking at scripture and just having a fun time. So I appreciate you guys coming out. Before we get started, can I open us up in prayer? Dear Lord, thank you so much for who you are, Lord. Thank you that you are the maker of all things. You are the sustainer of all things. Yet you come to us, Lord, and you love us, and you want to be there with us, Lord. You want to hold our hands through the challenges that we face, Lord, and with our family and with our friends, God. And I just pray that this time would be a time where we could really search our hearts, Lord, and think about how we can honor you and our families, Lord, how we can be a light to Jesus in the darkness, Lord. Would you speak to us, God? Would you refine us and bring us closer to you? In your son's name we pray. Amen. All right, well, you'll have to forgive me because I am like the least tech-savvy person in the world. So I showed up with my tablet, and Gail's like, this doesn't work. So Jamie was sweet to let us borrow her laptop. Oh, no, it's fine. Let me see. As long as I can press play. Okay. I am not a – oh, thank you. I am not a therapist. I do not have a degree in family relationships. I was a teacher before I stayed home with – we have three little boys – four, almost three, thank you, and 10 months. But I love our family, and it's messy. My family has just as much junk as, you know, any other family. But I am passionate, and I do believe that we can be a vessel to our families. And so I'm excited to talk through this. Just to give you a little background, this is our family. So... now you know why I like to talk about boundaries. This on the left is, these are my in-laws, the Gosses. They're so sweet. Jer, my husband, has a sister and two brothers. And this is my family on the right. I'm the youngest. I have two older brothers. And we all live within 30 minutes of each other. And on top of that, both of our families are small business owners. So they all work together every single day. So we're all up in each other's business. It's fun. The Gosses, they have their business runs out of my in-law's house over in Sugarloaf. And so the whole entire basement is Goss RV. And so my mother-in-law, she cooks lunches for everybody. I mean, it's like they're constantly working together. And then my parents own super boring plastics company, but my brother Brian works for them, and then my brother Blake, he lives down in Florida, but he comes up and does some stuff on the side for them. So, yeah, it's busy, but it's fun, and yeah, that's them. So this is the first time that I realized that I needed boundaries. This is my oldest son. Okay, this is Daniel. So he is four and almost five. He was born on a Monday night at 9:03. And as you guys know, it takes like about an hour and a half after birth to get assimilated and figure things out and before you get transferred to your room. And I remember we had all of our boys over at Emory Johns Creek, and they wheelchair us over, and as we're walking over, the nurses come up to us and they're like, we have never seen this before. It's like a mob. Like, these people are outside waiting to see this baby. I mean, it was crazy. So that's like 10:30 at night on a Monday night. They're all in there seeing Daniel for the first time. So that was fun. That's like a, sorry, I'm not, this, let me lock this in there. Earring. So yeah, I remember those first few weeks when he was brought home from the hospital, it was a revolving door. It was exhausting. And it was this weird thing because people want to see you. They want to bless you. They want to bring you food. But then they don't leave your house. You know, they're there for like ever. And then, you know, it's hard. And so I remember we just had to kind of navigate through what was okay, you know, and what was not okay. And so that was kind of the first start with our boundaries. So sweet. So I have a little handout for you guys. Some of you may be thinking, what are boundaries? I'm going to read this and you guys can read along. It says, think of a boundary as a personal property line. It becomes the fence that divides the things for which we are responsible from the things that we are not. Boundaries define the terms of what's allowable or not in any relationship. When we love God and want to do the right thing, it can be easy for us to forget our own limits. But it's important to establish the norms and expectations in relationships. And then a second part of that is on the next one. It says, boundaries help us to distinguish our property so that we can take care of it. They help us to guard our heart with our diligence. We need to keep things that will nurture us inside our fences and keep things that will harm us outside. In short, boundaries help us keep the good in and the bad out. I have learned that it is totally okay and healthy to have boundaries in your families. God had boundaries, right? He tells us about the kingdom of heaven and who cannot enter the kingdom of heaven. He is the maker of boundaries. And so just to start off, it's a healthy thing. Now how we approach those is different. So that's kind of what we're going to talk about today. I like to think of us as we are the gatekeepers of our family, right? You and your husband are the gatekeepers of what your family is and what you can and cannot bring into your family. There's one example on the left. It says where there might be good on the outside and there might be some bad on the inside. And you need to be able to be that gatekeeper to say, okay, we need some help. There's good on the outside, our family, whatever, and we need to let them in. Or it might be on the outside where this typically can happen, where you have good on the inside and there's some bad on the outside. You might have some family history of some really serious things, and you need to be able to be that gatekeeper and keep those closed. Another example that I didn't put up here is when safe too. You are the good and the bad's on the outside, and you need to open up the gate to let them, to be able to minister to them, right? I mean, obviously, that's probably the most important diagram because that's the gospel, right? And I think that it's important to be able to discern, to be a good gatekeeper. The best way to do that is to be consistently in the Word. 2 Timothy 3:16 says, all scripture is God-breathed and is useful for teaching, rebuking, correcting, and training in righteousness. There's no manual, right? There's no guidebook of when or when not to let someone into your family. And that's where you really need the discernment of the Holy Spirit to guide you and to say, okay, what is safe right here? Whether it's a relationship with someone who has verbally abused you or physically abused you, or if someone who's just straight up hurtful, you need to be walking in the Spirit, and the Holy Spirit will give you that sense of peace for what you need to do in that situation. Also, I just want to hit on two. I think it's important as you continue in your family and as you guys continue to grow with children, establish with your husband what you want your family to look like. Do you want it to be more of an open door home? Do you want it to be more of a closed door home? I would say that he and I both grew up in very different. His family was very open door. His parents did Amway, so they were like constantly having, I mean, people work at Gosser V, so there's 30-something people there every day. So he grew up where it was very normal to have people over, spur of the moment, you know, like that. But for me and my family, it was not. You know, it was very planned. You know, you knew like 2 weeks in advance before someone was coming over. So we had to kind of navigate through that, what we wanted our family to look like. So I would encourage you guys kind of talk through that, you know. And I know there are people that have the open door. I mean, I know there's someone at the church who literally has on the outside of their house, they have an electronic open sign that they keep outside of their garage, and whenever that sign's on, anyone in the neighborhood can come in, and then whenever it's off, they just know, you know, don't come in. And they love that, though. They thrive on that, and you know, they're doing big things in their neighborhood for that. That's not my cup of tea, and that's okay too. So establish what you want your family to look like: open door, closed door. Hopefully we're a little bit in the both, you know. I like this next slide. This is, think of a boundary as the difference between being responsible to a person and being responsible for a person. You are responsible to these people to love them, to encourage them, to bless them, to pray for them, to serve them, but you are not responsible for their well-being, for their finances, for their happiness, for their success or failure, or for their spiritual progress. I also want to add, you're not responsible for how they might react to a situation. I think that's huge, too, a lot of times with family relationships. you can be as honest and pure in how you communicate something to a mother-in-law, and she might not take it the way that you intended it to. And you know what? That's okay. You can't control that, you know, and that's between her and her relationship with the Lord. Before we get in, hey girl, I can tell you now that I truly believe that I have a healthy relationship with my family, but it has not always been this way. And my come to Jesus moment, I got permission from Jer, my husband, to share the story. He was like, that's your crazy, you can share it. So you saw the picture of my family. This was December of 2013, so it was before I was like almost 8 months pregnant with Daniel. And we had been dating all throughout college, and so we always did the holidays. We kind of had a jive down going, right? We had a system going. But with his family specifically, we bought gifts for every single person. And so at the time, it was 13 people. And it was stressing me out. It was stressing me out big time. And every year, I fought hard, just to him, fought hard. Let's do a gift exchange. Let's do a gift exchange this year. This is the year. We are going to do a gift exchange. And every year it wasn't. You know, every year it was the gift for everybody. And so finally that year, I'm like, we have a baby coming. You know, this is the year. So I remember I sat down with Jer before he left for work, and I was like, okay, you're going to talk to them, right? And he said, yes. Okay, I'm going to have a meeting with my brothers and my sister and my parents, and we're going to talk about it, and I'm going to present the gift exchange. That's good. So we get home that night. We're sitting on the couch. I've got my pink cheetah robe on, big belly. I have my Tervis tumbler of water in the other hand, one hand, my iPhone in the other. I'm just kind of like nonchalantly, I think football was on the TV, and I said, so Jer, did you talk to your parents, you know, about the gift exchange? And I mean, if you know Jer, he's like the most calm, collected person in the world, totally unlike me. And he looks at me and he says, yeah, we spoke and we actually talked for a really long time. And they still feel really strongly about doing the gifts. And I also looked at our budget and I know that this is how much we can allot for each person this year. So I really feel like this is what we're called to do. And I stand up, I close my eyes, and I yell, this is ridiculous! And I threw my Tervis tumbler in one hand, my iPhone in the other. My iPhone goes all the way over into the kitchen, shatters into thousands of pieces on my hardwood floor. My Tervis tumbler hits his shin. He's on the couch, kneeling in pain, like from his shin injury. And I just start cackling laughing, like crazy cackling laughing, like, and then I like go hysterical. And he looks up at me and he goes, are you insane? And immediately I was like, oh my gosh, I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. I was so embarrassed. I mean, I was just like so embarrassed. I said, I'm so sorry. I'm picking up my phone. He's like, that's it. You're getting a flip phone from here on out. I'm like, no, please. I don't want a flip phone, please. And I mean, I'm just so embarrassed, right? And I knew right away what I did was wrong. And he was so calm and collected about it. And this is the most embarrassing part. We realize I'm almost 9 months pregnant. I'm working at the time. I need a phone. So you know what we do? That night we drive to his parents' house and they give me a phone. They give me a phone for free, an iPhone for free. And I can't tell them why we're over there because they're like, what happened? And I'm like, oh, I just dropped it. I've got butterfingers. I mean, I can't tell them, oh, yeah, thanks for this iPhone. I'm sitting here arguing about spending $25 on each of you. You know, I'm like, I couldn't say that. But it was the most humbling and embarrassing situation. And honestly, after that, I can't tell you that that was like immediately all of a sudden I had this kumbaya experience where I loved everybody. It's still every year there's hiccups. But I realized in that moment that the biggest issue wasn't the money. It wasn't even having to go shop for the 13 people. It was my control. I was fighting so hard every year for that control of what I wanted his family to do. And when I realized that I had zero control over that, I lost it. I lost it. And I really had to see the sin in that. And that is something I struggle with. I struggle with control. I love things to be done the right way. I'm very type A. And God really had to use that and break that. There are a couple different verses that really stick out to me when I think about this. It's the first one, search me, God, and know my heart. Test me and know my anxious thoughts. See if there is any offensive way in me and lead me in the way everlasting. Another one, just a couple. Above all else, guard your heart, for everything you do flows from it. Couple more. Sorry, y'all, this is like really small font. You were taught with regard to your former way of life to put off your old self, which is being corrupted by its deceitful desires, to be made new in the attitude of your minds, and to put on the new self created to be like God in true righteousness and holiness. And then the last one, this is so common. This one is the NIV version of this Matthew one. I want you later, look up the Message version. I don't know if you guys ever read the Message one. I read it and I was like, whoa, dang. You know, it was like super convicting. But I love this one. It says, do not judge or you too will be judged. For in the same way you judge others, you will be judged. And with the measure you use it, it will be measured to you. Why do you look at the speck of sawdust in your brother's eye and pay no attention to the plank in your own eye? How can you say to your brother, let me take the speck out of your eye, when all the time there's a plank in your own eye? You hypocrite. First take the plank out of your own eye, and then you will be able to see clearly to remove the speck from your brother's eye. I think I had labeled a lot of that as the gift situation as, oh, they're being materialistic. It's not about gifts. It's about Jesus, and I have the right heart about this. Like, and it wasn't, you know. Again, it goes back to that was my control, and also just seeing their perspective too. It wasn't about the money to them. They genuinely felt like they had a kumbaya meeting about it. That's how strong they were. They said, this is a rare thing. There are a lot of adult grown children that don't get to celebrate together. This is special. This is unique. And we want to be able to bless each other. That's their love language. You know, someone whose love language is gifts, they're not shallow. They genuinely take time and think about that and want to give that to that. And I really had to search my heart to be able to see that in them and not to see my own sin. So before we go on, we've got a couple other areas that we're going to hit on today. But I just want us to spend 3 minutes of us just listening to some music and praying, and I really want you to use this time to just have God search your heart, and maybe there is some areas where you are struggling with control or with pride or with anger, and we can't always control our outside situations. We can't change our family. They're who God put us in our life, but we can change our hearts. So before we get into anything else, just take this time. I'm going to do a little plug. This is Christy Knockle's new CD. I don't know if you guys have heard of it. It's the Lullabies CD. It's like $9 on iTunes. But it's amazing. But anyways, so just take this time and just reflect. Hold on. Wasn't that song beautiful? I think you just want to listen to that for like the next 20 minutes, right? Sorry, you got to hear this voice again. Okay. Our next section, Leaving and Cleaving. So this deals obviously more with your family. This is not about your husband leaving and cleaving. He's not here. Obviously, that's a different situation. But for us, what does that look like for us? And a lot of us have grown, you know, maybe done some premarital counseling, and this was hit on. I'm not going to spend too much time on this section because you might be obviously familiar with it. But just want to hit on a couple things, and then I'll tell you another quick little thing about me. Leaving and cleaving. What is it? What does it mean to cleave? Leave. In terms of your parents and family of origin, separation means that you leave the dependence, comfort, security of your parents' authority. You are literally breaking apart the old parent-child relationship, and you are also separating from your siblings and extended family. It's not that you are cutting ties with these dear people. Instead, you are forging a new relationship with them based on the fact that you are married and your highest priority relationship has now become your spouse and you. And obviously that transfers over with your spouse, you, and then your family. And what does it mean to cleave? It means creating a marital and family identity. The lack of oneness that causes many people to suffer in marriage occurs because one or both spouses remain more devoted to the self or other relationships than to their marriage union. The key is to remember that your marriage is the most important relationship next to God and needs to be in the front of everyone else. So Jer and I, we went to college together. We dated throughout college, went up to Berry College, and then we got one of the summers that we were in school, he interned with North American Mission Board up in New York City. And he came back that summer and he said, I'm going to be an urban church planner and we're going to move up to New York. He didn't say we. And I said, well, okay, I love you. I guess I'm going to be going up to New York and marrying you, you know. I graduated in May of 08, moved up to New York City in June of 08. No, we got married in June of 08. Moved up there in the July. It was crazy. And I was born and raised in this area. I mean, literally in Johns Creek. It was Duluth at the time. And then he was born over in Stone Mountain, and his parents have lived over in Gwinnett since college. So talk about a culture shock. We lived up in a 500-square-foot bedroom apartment up in Harlem, and I taught kindergarten at a little small Christian school, and he was working for Goss RV in our little apartment. While we were there, he was going to spend the first semester just getting assimilated to everything and figuring everything out. And I remember my parents, the first time they came up, my dad, he wakes up in the morning and he's just like, he's a glass, you know, half empty kind of person. And he got to our apartment and he said, that cab driver was trying to rip us off. He took us all around Manhattan to get here. And I'm like, no, we just live in Harlem and it takes forever to get here from LaGuardia. And so I remember that trip. And then, so I grew up in a gated community. I mean, like just the whole Johns Creek area. And then living up there, it was very alarming for my parents. It was a miracle when Jer asked for my hand in marriage with my dad that my dad even said yes. I mean, he loves Jer, but still, he's like, you're moving up to New York? And I still remember when they were complaining about the bus trip, the taxi trip, so we put them on the M60. I was 22, I was not thinking about this. The M60 bus, which only costs $9, and it goes straight through West Harlem, Central Harlem, East Harlem, or some of like literally the most dangerous streets of New York City. I put my parents on that bus. And they call me from, my mom calls me from LaGuardia. She's whispering on the phone and she just says, Caitlin, your father is just very concerned about you guys living up here. And I just want you to know we're just concerned. And I remember I hung up that phone and I was bawling. I was like, Jerry, move back, like I can't do this, like this is so hard, you know. I mean, it, like, I don't know about you, I just seek my parents' approval so much, it's scary, you know. And it was so healthy for us to have that first year of marriage away from our family. I think our marriage honestly would look a lot different today if we didn't have that first year apart. Mainly for me, he was like, peace out, family. But for me to just be able to really cleave to him and to his authority and to his opinion as the head of our household. And it was so healthy for us to spend that time away. We did not move back because of my parents. We moved back because he really wanted to pursue the family business. And that was the only thing that was keeping us up there. But yeah, I mean, I'm the first to say that I struggle with that. And so that's something that we have had to navigate through. Here are just some tips for you with your family. Don't rely too heavily on your parents to help in decision-making. It can make the other spouse feel insignificant. Make sure your spouse is the one to meet your emotional needs, not your parents. And then don't reveal details of marital conflict with your parents. A couple things. I think someone told me this once. It was always really wise. If your parents ask you for something, whether it's, hey, we want to come over and hang out with the kids, you know, or whatever the request is, someone once told me it was really wise to not say, well, let me talk to Jer, and let me see what he says. I think that's kind of our natural default to say that. Just say, you know, let us discuss it, and then I'll get back to you. And then whenever you do discuss it, even if it is your husband that says no, just say, we discussed it. And that the more that you create a united front to your parents, to your in-laws, to anyone else, the harder it is for people to see that weakness. And so you might be completely on a different page about it, but always, always, always present to the people, your family, that it was a decision that you both came with together because you are one. And so I would just encourage you to put on a very strong front in whatever decision it is. And then make sure that your emotional needs are met by your husband. I mean, that goes, you know, back to that old book from the 80s, His Needs, Her Needs. Make sure that your husband is the one that's meeting that emotionally need in you, not your parents. Don't get that approval from them or from anyone else for that matter. And then again, about the marital conflict, unless there's obviously some serious issues going on, you know, don't vent on your hubby. So this, now we're going to have some table talk time for this. We're just going to have about five, 10 minutes about this. But within your table, kind of talk about, A, what is the relationship like with your parents? Are there any areas of your relationship that you might need to leave in order to improve your marriage or family? Are there areas where you might be too dependent on your parents? Just kind of talk that out if you're comfortable. I know, introduce yourself if you guys don't know who you're working with. We'll spend about 5 minutes, 5-10 minutes on that. So I know one thing that we were talking about was the struggle with your parents. A lot of you that might have parents that live here in the area, feeling like, I know for my parents, for example, they help babysit a lot. We've actually never had to pay for babysitters before. We've always had grandparents. And so there's kind of that weird feeling of like hanging it over us. You know, they don't ever say anything, but feeling like we can come over whenever, we can do, you know, being able to say, you know, no, that's not going to work out for us tonight, and then not feeling like, but you're still going to babysit tomorrow night, right? You know, like, right? We're still good? 5 o'clock? Okay, good. Did anyone have anything that you wanted, anyone wanted to share something from your parents, anything that you struggle with, or we all struggle with it? I didn't want to do this, but I've got gift cards if someone talks. Don't make me. No, I mean, it's cool. Okay, yeah? Would you? Sorry, do you want the mic? I love that. Thanks for sharing. Here's the gift card. I have no idea how much is on it. Good luck. Hopefully it's not empty. Has that ever happened to y'all before? That's like really sick. That's happened to me a couple times where I get a gift card and I show up and they're like, there's nothing on that. Like, thanks a lot. Stingy people. No. I love that too. And I think too, it goes back to, like, you know, when I was planning this, I'm like, yeah, I can give some tips. I can give some experience, but at the end of the day, there is no guidebook. We all have every single different family structures, and it's cool. Thanks for sharing that. Yeah. Okay. Let's go to the next one. There'll be more table talk time. This is the part you all came for, the reality of the in-law relationship. Drum roll. I love this. These are two slides. I'm going to read this. According to a newly released study, men who are on good terms with their wives' parents are more likely to enjoy a long-lasting marriage. Yet researchers found that a wife's relationship with her husband's parents is a bit more complicated and less indicative of overall marital happiness. When a man bonds with his in-laws, his wife gets the message that your family is important to me because you're important to me. I want to feel close to them because I want to be closer to you. Wives love that, and marriages get a longevity bump. This is part two. Oops, sorry. But when a wife feels close to her in-laws, or I don't know how you say that last name, that person, sees two possible reasons things go the other way. First, in-law ties are more stressful to women because it interferes with and takes away time from bonding with the husband and her own family. Women like to analyze, work on, and improve relationships. They think that of in-law ties the same way. That time takes away from other things that strengthen bonds with the husband. Can I get an amen? I think that is the biggest struggle for me is, you know, every family has their sets of challenges, but in general, I mean, I truly do really love my in-laws. Like, there's not anything that I can, you know, complain about, really. It's just that time. It feels like I feel so stretched thin already, and to be able to have our families here and our friends here, I don't want to be a mile wide and an inch deep, and sometimes I feel that way. And so I know me, I am a task-oriented person, and I also love relationships, and I want to work on that. And so sometimes it can feel like it's one more relationship I have to put on. But the reality is, they are your family, and they're your husband's family. And it's so important for us, whether they're here or whether they're in another state, that is their legacy. That's their history from your husband. And so it is important to nurture that relationship, especially for them to see both sides of that. This first question. As a daughter-in-law, what's required of me? What are my obligations, whether I feel like it or not, in relating to my spouse's parents? And just the answer simply is behavior that is consistently Christian in character, as you would with anyone else. You know, I think about, for me, right now, if you ask Daniel, my oldest, he'll tell you I'm the queen. Okay, I've got three boys. Like, he literally will say, "Mom, you're the queen." I'm like, "Yeah, you're right." But there will be one day where I am not their queen. You know, they will have a queen. And I got to get in with that queen, you know? Like, I got to make sure I keep my tie straight. And I just think, you know, I think there was a Moms Connect where Carol and Suzanne came and were talking about relationships and in-laws too. And something that they just stuck with me was like, you're going to be an in-law one day, you know? You know, I'm not like a karma person or anything like that, but, you know, treat others the way you want to be treated. One day you are going to be that mother-in-law, and what your kids are seeing how you're treating your in-laws, whether they're seeing it how you treat them in person or how you speak of them to your husband, your children hear that. And it's important that we're honoring them so that we teach them, most importantly, so we're honoring God in our relationships, but also we want to model healthy relationships with our children too, because one day if they see us not honoring that, they might not honor that when they're older. So do to others as you would have them do to you. I love this verse. This is 2 Timothy 2:24 through 26. And the Lord's servant must not be quarrelsome, but must be kind to everyone, able to teach, not resentful. Opponents must be gently instructed in the hope that God will grant them repentance, leading to a knowledge of the truth, and that they will come to their senses and escape the trap of the devil, who has taken them captive to do his will. We are vessels to our family. And I know I was reading some article where it was like, the reality is in our world, our biggest form of persecution is not going to be us being thrown into a lion's den or us being off in, you know, Afghanistan or something like that. Our true test of our faith a lot of times will be those small waves that we have, those awkward conversations, those hiccups that we have along the way. The majority of our testing is going to come in relational issues. And so these are opportunities for us to be able to be a light to those people. You know, we have some people in our family that have some very vast differences in their beliefs. And I remember when I was younger, when we were dating, I cared so much about making sure that they knew that what we believed was right. I mean, we go to Perimeter Church, so of course we say what I believe is right, right? No. But I cared so much about my doctrine and being right that I cared about their hearts. And so just with every conversation that you might have, I also think about, I remember when my in-laws and my parents watched my oldest when I was finishing up teaching. And I remember one day I came over and Daniel wasn't swaddled the right way that I had him swaddled, and he didn't have his passy on the side of his, you know. And I remember I got frustrated with my mother-in-law because she put him with a blanket, and he was fine. It really truly was fine. But I remember at the time thinking, like, it was the biggest deal in the world. Like, it was the most, you know, how dare she? And I didn't respond. I was probably how I'm talking right now. I was talking quickly. I was turned red. It was an awkward conversation. I remember her saying something like, oh, well, that's what we did when we were younger, you know. And I remember we had to talk through that, and it was awkward. But kind of losing my track on that one. But I feel like always value the relationship more than whatever you feel like you have to say is right. You know what I mean? Always put that relationship in the forefront, because that's how you're going to show them grace, is by, you know, you don't have to have everything right. You are going to disagree with some pretty pivotal things. And sometimes it's the old true, tried and trick true. It's not what you say, it's how you say it, you know? So here are a couple things. The verse, honor your father and mother so that you may live long in the land that the Lord your God is giving you. We are called to honor our mothers and fathers and our mother and father-in-laws. But what it requires us to show them patience, kindness, gentleness, and respect. But what it doesn't require us to do is to submerge all of our own feelings, desires, preferences, and needs in the service of doing it their way. It doesn't mean that we can permit them to disrespect, control, or manipulate us for their selfish ends. And it also doesn't entail obeying all of their parental requests or requirements. So I think that goes with both sides. Here are some tips about just being civil. You know, again, going back to, it's not what you say, it's how you say it. Be proactive. Do what you can to build the relationship. With our in-laws, I always feel like the more deposits you can put in the bank, the more times that you can initiate conversation or interactions with them, the more it's the less likely a withdrawal is gonna feel like a blow, right? So if you're always feeling like you're saying, I can't do this, I can't do that, I can't come to this, or you guys can't, if you're feeling like you're always having to put up those boundaries, find more ways where you can be the person that's proactive to initiate things. Does that make sense? So whether it's, and we'll get into that in a second. Don't compete with other family members. I don't know if your situation's like this with your siblings. We have a lot of siblings, and you might have those weird conversations where it's, well, Susie's son is walking, or so-and-so is speaking Spanish, you know, just... I love that there's a good acronym called NORTH, not our row to hoe. Let me just say, not our row to hoe, NORTH. It's a good acronym. And stay in your lane, you know what I mean? Don't be interfered by what your siblings and their in-laws are doing. Don't fall into that comparison trap. You know, don't, there's always going to be someone whose kid is smarter or whose family looks more put together. I always pray to God that my kids would just be super average. Like, I don't want them to be really great at something where they feel like they don't need God, and I don't want them to be really bad at something where they see their inadequacies. I'm just like, just let them be average. refocus your perspective by looking for the positive, and I love that you said that. Instead of finding all the ways to be critical of our family, find the good in them. And the more that you reflect and talk about the good in them, the more your heart will be changed to that. And then accept reality. Accept them for who they are and where they are. Don't try and change them. Don't try and expect them to be someone else that they're not, you know. I think that's really important. My mom always says this, and she said this her whole life. She says, God gives us imperfect parents to show us how perfect he is. And that is the truth. You know, I think about if we had those perfect parents, we wouldn't see our need for our father. And so I think that's cool. Okay, so here are some tips that I just kind of brainstormed. You guys are about to have a table talk. Invite them over for dinner or invite them out for dinner. I know for me, it depends. If I love having just parents over for dinner, that doesn't feel overwhelming to me. If it's the whole, you know, hospital crew coming over to my house, I'm going to feel a little bit more stressed out. If we go out to dinner, I feel like you have a little bit more control over the time. You know, it's not going to be a whole afternoon. Be specific with parameters and time. Invite them to a sporting event. We just entered in the world of that with T-ball, and it's great because we see them every Saturday morning for an hour, both sets of parents, and then we all go home to our own houses. So it's great. They all get to see the siblings. They get to see each other, and then they're gone. It's good. Ask them questions about your husband as a child. So the reason why I say this is you might not want the advice that they give you, right? You might be like, okay with that. But I still think that there's something to be said about just allowing them. What is it that Carol said? Sometimes we expect our in-laws to be mute servants. Did you remember her saying that? Where it's like we expect them to babysit and do all these things, but don't give us any advice and don't tell us what we're doing wrong. And I think that's kind of sad. I think that they, you know, they've been here. They've been through a lot of ups and downs. They've been through a lot of trial and error. And so if you don't feel comfortable saying, how should I do this? Ask them, What was Jer like as a child? Like, was he a good baby? Was he a bad baby? You know, like, what were some things that you navigated through? What were some challenges? And then that way they feel like they can talk and communicate to you without feeling like they're giving you advice. And you get to learn more about your husband, which is always really cool too. Ask them about their early years in parenting. And then give them a hug. I know that might sound kind of cheesy, and some of you maybe are not physical touch people. I see a huge difference when I give my mother-in-law a hug, and I tell her I love her. I mean, I feel like I love her more when I give her a hug. Let them feel your warmth. Let them feel that you do care about them. And I know that might not be a natural thing, but just try it next time. There's some practical tips, too. I think... And I'm sorry I couldn't give you more practical tips. Again, all of our families are so different. And we'll talk about the holidays. I think one thing, too, that we used to go through, we used to go out and celebrate every single person's birthday. So that was 13 birthdays, dinners that we would go to. And then when we all kept having kids, it just kind of got out of hand. And so we finally had to have a conversation where it was, okay, let's all just decide that we're going to go out with for just the kids' birthdays. And or whatever, whether that's the birthday dinners, whatever it is, just have an open conversation with it. I would also encourage you to have a conversation with the mother and father-in-law, not necessarily the other siblings. You know what I mean? Don't make it where it's go directly to the source and let them be the ones to communicate out. Don't try and be the mom in that family. You know, I think that there's some weird issues that you could bring to surface with that. So, yeah, I'm excited to hear what you guys. This next part is kind of a table talk for you guys. I'd love to hear some tips that you have with your in-laws. What works, maybe what doesn't work. So spend some time, and we'll do 10 minutes talking about. Do I have questions? Oh, hold on. What are some ways that you can practically love your in-laws? What are some activities that you can include them in your immediate family? So we'll take 10 minutes to do that. So at our table, we had a good conversation about people when you have family coming in town and the barrage of maybe it's your mother-in-law or your father-in-law, chances are mother-in-law, that is the questioning, the nitpicker, or maybe is unknowingly criticizing you or your parenting. We had some good conversations about that. There was someone in the, sometimes we feel like we can't say anything, you know, or maybe our husbands don't agree with us. Maybe they don't see anything wrong with it either. Someone had a good point of advice at our table that, Sarah, will you say what your advice was? That I feel like you would do a better job. Sorry, do you want a mic? I don't know where the mic is, sorry. Oh. Sorry to put you on the spot here.
I feel totally inadequate.
I know, I'm sorry, but you verbalized it so well. Thanks, Gail.
Yeah.
Okay.
Is this on? I can get wordy, so stop me. My inclination as a human, I guess, is to compare. And we were talking about in conversations with our spouse, it's easy to start bringing in, well, with this situation, it's like this and this. But like, for example, well, my family does this and your family does this. But I think to be in a position with your spouse to say, you know, if you want to bring up something and say, this is an issue, and then that the spouse may say, well, but with this, you know, just to say, listen, please tell me what the issue is with my family, but that's a separate conversation. We're not going to compare. Let's talk about this and isolate it and work together as a team. And then let's go to this, because that's important too. What's most important is us, but let's not compare, because it's not constructive, and yeah, it's not constructive.
No, I love that, because I feel like it opens up our husbands to be able to, like, sometimes they don't want to change because they see us not wanting to change. So being able to invite a conversation of saying, yes, I want to talk about what you might be offended in my family or what you might feel like I need to change, and let's talk about that too. I thought that was really good. And then Jamie also had some great advice too, is before you're going into a situation, thank you, Sarah, I'm sorry to put you on the spot. It's just honestly praying. I know I'm not trying to be cheesy, but like legitimately praying, having people pray for you, going into it. What'd you say, the loins? Gird your loins, ladies. Gird your loins. I love that. But like prepping yourself for that. And then also understanding too that they have sin in their heart too. And a lot of the criticisms and the critiques that they're giving you is 99% of the time it has nothing to do with you. It has everything to do with what's in their heart and what God is working on in their heart, or was, you know, or what they're not allowing him to work on. So instead of taking those blows and taking them as anger and taking them as or personally, turn that into compassion and honestly, and know that they have that sin in their heart too. It's not 90% of the time, like I said, it's not about you. Did anyone else want to share something that was helpful at their table? Any good points? No? No gift cards? No one wants Starbucks? Okay. Oh, yes, Sarah, I'm sorry. I should give you like 3 for talking on the mic.
Okay. Really,
okay. No, thanks.
I just want to say something
real quick. Yeah, girl, come on. You want the Randy Pope mic?
Just real quick, I had this conversation with my husband last night. I was about to say at our table, but I just it was so powerful for me. And this is second, third hand. It was something someone told my husband. So anyway, we can't take credit for it. But my husband was struggling with a relationship in his life that it's imminent. He can't get away from it, at least for a while. And anyway, this situation, the man was giving advice to my husband, and he said, let me back up. So the man had a painful relationship or circumstance, and he went to God, and he was like, okay, I can forgive this person, but what do I do with this pain? You know, how do I move forward? I've forgiven, but this pain is real, and this frustration is real. What do I do with this? And he said that he felt like the answer from the Lord was, this pain is not between you and this person, it's between you and me. And I'm using this pain for you to come to me. And I think that's so hard to accept that our Father in heaven is using pain to bring him to us, but I think that it's a true tool that he uses. And there will always be some pain in relationships, especially as they get closer. And with family, it's just gonna be close at times. But I think to remember that this pain is not between us and this person, when we have pain in our hearts, ultimately, it's something that God is in control of and can use in our lives. And I think that was hard, but also a little bit freeing for us to talk through last night. Because the pain and the frustration is real, but, you know, how do we work through it?
Yeah. Thanks for sharing, sir. Appreciate that.
But that actually is a really great point, and I was going to hit on that too. A lot of times if you're sitting around, there's going to be more confrontation that comes up. If you can, whether it's holidays, Christmas, Thanksgiving, go and do something together. Get outside. And I know for us, we feel happier, healthier, more energized rather than just sitting around. I know that can't always happen with certain people with physical things or whatever, but there's, you know, I know in our family, Thanksgiving, they do like a turkey bowl together and football, and it's like everyone's sweating, getting out testosterone, everyone's good, venting it out. Okay, I want to make sure we're good on time. This next section, you like that, Griswold? Everyone else like that movie? So I love that movie. It's favorite movie. The holidays, make sure. Navigating through the holidays, I feel like this can kind of go hand in hand with the in-laws too. I was talking to Aaron at the beginning, and we both have similar family structures with parents, families both here. I don't have any specific advice for this because, again, all of us are in different situations. Some of us travel. I know for us, we just decided that we were going to do it. We're going to go gung-ho. We do Thanksgiving with both families. It actually has worked out well with both. It's a marathon. I'm like chugging coffee between houses. And then Christmas, we figured out, you know, how to navigate. We do Christmas Eve service with my parents here. We'll do our own Christmas in the morning at our house, and then we'll go to his parents in the afternoon. And we do it. We really realize, for us, it was one of those things where we realized, and granted, we do have that chunk of time on Christmas morning, but it was one of those things where it's like, we have all these people that want to be with us. Like, that's a good problem to have. There's going to come a time when my parents aren't around anymore, when his parents aren't around anymore, and I will miss them. And I, you know, we'll be twiddling our thumbs or whatever. But so we do hunker down. And yeah, it's long and it's exhausting, but it's 2 days out of 363 days. So some of you are like, are you serious? That's not what I wanted you to say. But a couple of things. This is Tibbetts I have. And then I'll give us 10 minutes before. I think you have 11:45 childcare pickup, right? So we'll do some table time to end this up. But this was my advice. Pray in advance again. Just prep yourself, you know? I feel like I look at my calendar, December 1st comes around, and I'm like, you know? Prep yourself and have clear expectations. Communicate expectations. If you can, the earlier the better. Like July 1st, whatever. You know, email, text, call your parents, call your mother-in-law. It's like, hey, what are we going to do? For Christmas this year, what would you like to do? You know, as I say that too, it might even be good to word it, what are your expectations for Christmas this year, rather than saying, what are we going to do? right? Because then you can kind of get a feel. You don't feel like you're surrendering your rights over at Christmas time, but at the same time, you're putting it on their radar. Consider how your parents and other relatives may wish to have you involved. You know, it's their holiday too. It's not always just about what we want for our families. Protect your family, be those gatekeepers, but also be willing to know that they're your family and they love you. You have precious children that they want to invest in, and that's not a bad problem. So agree on how you as a couple would like to establish your own holiday traditions and work for balance and fairness. Like I said, we really wanted to be firm about our morning time for us with both of our families here, that we wanted that morning time to spend with just our family. And we really hold firm about that and have certain traditions and things like that. But also just truly work for fairness with that, you know, and that might look differently, but just talk to your husband and figure out between you two how you can find that balance well to make sure that both families don't feel like they're being gypped or anything like that. And then be opening to changing your plan as needed. I know there was one year where we went up to, before we had kids, we went up to New York City, Jer and I, for Thanksgiving, and we didn't do the families. And I remember our families were like, you're not going to be here? And it was cool. It was like really fun to go and do something different. And so if you might feel like you're in a rut or you feel like you have your hands tied behind your back, maybe there can be a year where you go and do something differently, and then it kind of resets things and it doesn't feel like you have to do something the same way. You might not have that option, but again, I wish I could give you set advice for this, but I feel like it's a good conversation that you guys can maybe have with each other and some tips. I got nothing on this. I think for me it's just truly, I pray if anything that we can walk out of here today and say that we have changed hearts, you know, and I think if we go from there, if we have renewed hearts, renewed spirits about it, I feel like we can face some of those conflicts. I do want to say for if you have situations with your family where there's some serious hurts, you know, some physical things where the holidays bring up a lot of boundaries, I didn't print them off, but there is a great two-part article on the Gospel Coalition's website. It's called Home for the Holidays When Home Isn't Safe, and it's by Dan Doriani, and he talks about how his father was very verbally and physically abusive and how they navigated that. I think he even wrote a book. But again, that's called Home for the Holidays When Home Isn't Safe, to maybe help guide you with that. We'll take another, so we have about 7 minutes for you to talk about your within your families here. Let's go. Share your family dynamic in the holidays. Share some positive examples that you've navigated through. What's your biggest challenge that you are facing coming up with the holidays? And then I'll close us in prayer and then we can go. So, I'll do that afterwards. Okay, 7 minutes, table talk, holidays, go. Okay, I want to make sure that you guys get out in time and have some time to chit-chat before you go pick up your Chia Wham. But I'm out of gift cards, but if someone has something good that they can share real quick, I'd love to hear it. It's Justine, right? So she's one of 9 siblings, so she should totally be up here. The youngest of 9 siblings. But I like how she said for gifts, they have it where the siblings do a gift exchange.
Yeah, so like the siblings and spouses give a gift to each other, we draw names, and then the kids do the same thing.
Yeah,
so rather than. My family, me and my husband, and we have 2 kids, maximum we're giving 4 gifts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, you'd have to take out a loan with that family to get, yeah. Something else too is when we decided with the gifts, we also realized that this was the amount that we were going to spend, and it might have been, but I'm even saying with his family, I'm saying Jer and I decided this was how much we can spend budget-wise, and if people want, and we told them this is about the average amount that we're going to spend. Please don't feel like you, just because we wanted to set expectations, you know, like we get them this gift and then they spend like 50, 60 something dollars on us. It's a lot different. They know, you know, up front, just in case you have some people like that, that are like keeping track of the price tag on your gift. There's one in every family, you know, there is. And then also I never told you guys this. I told my table, but I had my husband, he gets gifts for his whole side of the family.
And no one knows that, but he gets the gifts for his family and I get the gifts for my family. And that kind of helps eliminate some stress from me. I don't know if you trust your husband to go get the gifts. Anyways, I want to give this away. So this is a book called Boundaries by Dr. Cloud and Dr. Townsend. Huge. I will have to tell you, I'm really good about reading a book, but I did highlight just like one little paragraph if you're quirky about that and you're like, I can't have that because you highlighted it. But honestly, for whoever first come, whoever raises their hands first, if you want this. Yeah? All right. There you go. That's where I got a lot of the information from, but that was a good book too. Okay, well, let me close us in prayer, and then Gail has a couple announcements, and then next week, Kelsey Dykes is talking. You're talking about
co-parenting.
It
does not. I feel like that word kind of connotates, like, our society uses co-parenting more for parents that are separated. We're not going there. That's a whole different thing. So we're talking about, like, championing your spouse and partnering with them well as parents.
Yeah, I'm excited.
Being together.
Excited to hear that, Kelsey. Okay, let me pray, and then Gail's going to give announcements. Lord, thank you so much for this time together. Lord, I just thank you so much for each and every one of these women. Thank you for their vulnerability. Lord, just make us more like you. That's my prayer, God. Just renew our spirits, renew our hearts, Lord. Search the sin in our heart, Lord, and bring it to light, God. And I pray that we would delight in you and that we would see that you are working in our families, Lord. Thank you so much. It's in your son's name we pray. Amen.
Is it on? There it is. Thanks so much, Caitlin. That was great. When I was listening to her a long time ago when I lived in Suwannee, 17 years ago now, 18 years ago, some other friends from Perimeter lived in that neighborhood, and we so desperately wanted to try to reach out to our neighbors. We thought, let's do a study. Let's do some kind of book study. What is a good subject for people to gather around? So we picked the Boundaries book. And we had close to 40 women show up for that study. So it's a very necessary topic. And it was great because we kept getting a little more in-depth doing Bible study, and we kept having about 20, 25 in our neighborhood come. But Boundaries really kicked it off. It's an important subject. So I hope y'all had great table discussion. I'm sure you were well encouraged by everybody and really encouraged by you. So funny, my in-laws didn't always give advice, but they used to clip newspaper and magazine articles on parenting and mail them to us. And they would write, read this across the top. So I'm like, oh, I'm getting more parenting advice from my in-laws in the mail. So, but that was sweet that they didn't come out and talk to us about it. They just mailed us articles. A quick announcement. Child care is getting a little trickier every week. Melanie has been short workers, so we're going to need to cut off child care for each week on Monday afternoon at 5. And if you can't get registered by then we're going to have to ask you not to just show up on Thursday because Melanie has to try to get enough workers in for the day. So if you haven't registered for the whole semester and you're registering week by week, what might be best for you is if you know the weeks that you really want to come, go ahead and register for those, and then Melanie can make a good plan going forward. And we have adjusted the cost. If you want to go ahead and register for the rest of the semester, for members, it'll be $60 for the rest of the semester. For non-members, $70. So just think about that if you want to go ahead and register for the rest of the weeks. But again, if there are certain weeks that you know you want to come and those are the only ones you can come, if you could go ahead and register for that, that would be easiest. And then you don't have to think of it from week to week. But she just wants to make sure she can have the rooms open. And when people are trickling in, you know, one a day until Wednesday, then she's having to make phone calls every night trying to get the workers here. So we knew this first semester would be kind of a trial for us to see what would work best. So please email me, GailH@perimeter.org, if you have any questions, because I know it can be confusing. Okay. Everybody, pack up and go. Thanks for being here.